Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another. To be with our surroundings, to be. And we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings.
Akwe, greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native people throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations.
Na na yuya, na na yuya,
traditional music from Nigerian singer-songwriter Babatunde Olatunji from his Healing Rhythm Songs and Chants CD. That special song was entitled Nini, an invocation to Mother Earth. Babatunde wrote that prayer song on the 20th anniversary of Earth Day. I've had the privilege to get to know Mr. Olatunji before we pass into the spirit world from our participation at a special annual gathering known as the Prayer Vigil for the Earth. This ceremony occurs every Wate Baga Gishish moon, more commonly known as September. The prayer vigil takes place in the traditional homeland of the Piscataqua Indian Nation in what's now called Washington, D.C. The prayer vigil for the earth, started by Native American elders, welcomes all peoples to share a sacred fire and prayers for the well-being of all life. There are many fine spiritual paths represented at the prayer vigil each year, and I encourage our worldwide listeners to visit the Prayer Vigil's website for further information. Their site is www.oneprayer.org. Once again, the Prayer Vigil for the Earth website is www.oneprayer.org. Ashkwe, greetings and hello, everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. In today's program, we share a conversation with my African friend, Matthew Owatoki. Matthew is here in Southwest Florida for an environmental internship in completion of his master's degree. We both share similar concerns about environmental protection and conservation-based rural development, very important needs in his country of Nigeria and throughout the Third World. I met Mr. Owatoki in an Earth Day event on the campus of Florida Gulf Coast University, where I lecture and serve on the Board of Advisors of Florida Gulf Coast University's Center for Environment and Sustainability Education. Matthew was sitting at the information table of the Caloosahatchee River Citizens Association, the River Watch Conservation Organization he was working for. Yad Kiddushi Native Center has partnered with this fine group in previous campaigns to protect the region's watershed and coastal estuaries. I would like to now welcome Mr. Matthew Owatoki to Wolf Mountain Radio.
When we use the term development, in a sense, is using the mentality or the concepts of what I call the Western world, many of which comes from colonialism. And I look at a lot of the situations that's happening in Africa specifically, the poverty and malnutrition, the problems of not having enough water, deforestation, is not so much the problem of people in Africa, but the historical legacy of how the industrialized countries, the North, such as the United States, Europe, Japan, have really used Africa and other parts of the tropical hemisphere, what is called the less developed countries, Asia, the Pacific, Central, South America, really as areas for profit and exploitation. And the word development is not really developing anything except getting more natural resources and using the land, say, for more agriculture that will be for economic benefit of the industrialized West. Would you agree with that? And if so, how do we deal with this?
You look at the issue of colonialism. I mean, many African countries have suffered from this. And even presently, I still see some of the traces of colonial rule. Because you look at in some countries where we have leadership, most leadership within the African sphere have been influenced by Western world. The Western world looks at a particular country and look at what they can gain from that country and dictate, who should be in power. If you do not dance to the tune of this Western world, they boot you out. They know how to plan the coup to eject you out from there and bring in the person that will listen, that will dance to their beat. But that's one big problem. Look at in the days of colonialism back in Africa, you discover that this developed world, they came into Africa, plundered the resources, tapped into the natural resources that they could get, and, you know, they milked, the economy of this developing countries. Now we could still see the impact of that I would call it a terrible reign. It's a reign of anarchy. Yes. You know, right upon the structure of those countries where they were at large, you know, during those days. So it's something that I believe that even now is still evident that some of these countries, they come in, they look at the resources, you see the influence of the IMF. IMF tell you how to dictate your economy. If you don't dance to their tune, then you're in trouble. They see how to influence and bring untold hardship to the populace. I mean, the poor people, which is not in the best interest of development. I mean, I've heard of cases of situations where the International Monetary Fund dictates policies to cut. If you want to get a loan, then you have to do it this way. If you don't fulfill these obligations, then you don't get the loan. And when such things happen, they plunder the economy deeper down, and it doesn't help development. So I believe strongly that Western interference into economic situations, I mean, has really contributed in no small measure to what, I mean, African country in particular is facing. I believe, sure, we are not saying they shouldn't come in, step in to give their word of advice, but not to the extent, the level of interfering in policies, because they are not there. They look at what they can benefit, they look at what they can take, the natural resources they can take from these countries, they're not considering the adverse effect it will have on the poor people. So I believe so much that unless the Western world have a reorientation, a rethinking of what they are really, really doing in terms of trying to dictate policies to developing world, then it will be very, very difficult, I mean, for real development to occur in most of these developing countries. And most of our leaders, of course, it's Africa. It will really, really take a strong desire in the heart of these African leaders to turn their backs on what the Western world is saying. If you don't dance to their tune, you may lose aids, you know, financial aids and all that meant for development. Exactly. But it's just like the issue of victimization. You don't dance to my tune, then I stop giving you this. How long are we going to continue doing that? For there to be a true development that will also affect the most remote part of the world, then the Western world, those in the seat of power, should have a rethink.
Well, you just commented upon the interference of Western industrialized nations who are able to control much of the politics and economics of third world countries is an issue I totally agree with you. Even after the so-called decolonization process in less developed countries, developed nations such as the United States, Japan, and European countries still maintain major power over the third world. Economic institutions such as the World Bank and International Monetary Fund, the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, GATT, and so-called development agencies with their aid money dominate and dictate commerce and policy all over the planet. Since the term colonization is not so politically correct anymore, the issue is now called globalization. This is a subject Wolf Mountain Radio often broadcasts about in order to inform and educate worldwide listeners why our planet is facing so many serious problems and why millions of poor people throughout the world are suffering. Globalization, especially driven by greedy multinational companies in partnership with governments, exploit the lands and peoples of the third world for energy, natural resources, and agribusiness. They have no concern for the well-being of the environment or people wherever they operate. I'm reminded of our Ogoni tribal brother, Ken Sawawiwa, who was murdered by Shell Oil Company in cooperation with the Nigerian government at the time. Mr. Sawawiwa fought to defend his native homeland from the pollution and community disruption caused by Nigeria's energy program with Shell Oil. I don't see the Western industrialized nations willing to give up their chokehold on the rest of the world. The developed nations really won't fully acknowledge sovereignty and self-determination of peoples in less developed countries, such as in your continent of Africa. As a Native American, the protection of Mother Earth and sovereignty and self-determination is a fundamental issue and right denied us American Indians, First Nations people, here in what's now called North America. Many of our Indian reservations and territories are like third world countries. Indian lands are being exploited for energy, water, and natural resources, often without the consent of tribal peoples. The colonial history of the United States and Canada towards Indians and our sacred lands and waters is similar to the colonization of the non-white Western world, like Africa. In most cases, our tribal government leaders have little choice but to go along with the dictates of Washington and Ottawa. Like you said, if you don't dance to their tune, you will risk losing the small scraps of funding so desperately needed. So what you just talked about in answer to my question is an important issue, not only for the Third World, but also for all indigenous peoples throughout the world. Music from singer-songwriter Jimmy Cliff. That classic song was entitled 400 Years. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. My program guest today is Mr. Matthew Owatoki from Nigeria, Africa. Matthew and I participated at a Florida Gulf Coast University Earth Day Environment Forum where I had the opportunity to talk with him. We both share concerns about the well-being of Mother Earth and issues now called environment and sustainable development. Earlier in our conversation, we briefly spoke about the issue of global agribusinesses, new technology of genetic engineering, also called GMOs, genetically modified organisms. I consider this another chapter in agricultural colonization. As an ecologist, I am very worried about the biological impact new so-called plant varieties and animal species will have on nature. The Green Revolution hybrids did not result well for many rural farming societies who were forced into adopting so-called scientific improved seed varieties. In Southeast Asia, for example, I saw the serious negative consequences of introducing new rice by the International Rice Research Institute, IRRI, to a rural farming society. Mountain tribal Kalingo Apayo farmers I live with have been growing cultivated terrace rice for many generations sustainably. Their farming system, traditional rice varieties, is very well suited to their region's soils, microclimate, and hydrology. It also utilized appropriate technology in the form of water buffalo, which provided natural fertilizer and animal power to till the rice beds. The Green Revolution genetic hybrids did not grow well in the mountain region. The International Rice Research Institute rice varieties also depended upon very expensive, large inputs of fertilizers and pesticides, which the natural local rice varieties did not need. Poor farmers also were forced into buying gas-generated tilling machines. They were too expensive for most farmers, which caused many families to go deeper into debt. Unlike animal power, the machines often broke down and were nearly impossible to repair by the average farmer. I'm sure there are many similar other examples from the Green Revolution technology programs from other crops such as corn, wheat, millet, and sorghum in other parts of the world. Another important aspect of the question of genetic engineering, genetically modified organisms in agriculture and aquaculture, is who will really benefit from this technology? Is it the poor village farmer and millions of people throughout the world who suffer hunger and malnutrition? Probably not. Probably the beneficiary of this new scientific farming will be the multinational agribusiness industries and the people of the developed nations who already have more food than they really need. There are also unanswered questions about human health impacts from GMOs. Matthew, would you please share any further comments you have on this question?
I remember during one of our classes, we had a little bit of debate on this, and it's even an issue within the developed world also. I know that I think in Germany, there's a ban on GMO products from America, and of course, I mean, it's Germany. Germany can talk and the U.S. will listen, but when you take it back down to Africa, I mean, we can stand in the way. I mean, it's a thing of maybe the American government or from whatever the GMO is coming from, to talk to the leadership of the country and telling them, don't worry, if we're going to bring this down here, we're going to give you this in exchange. But that's not the real thing that should happen. I believe what the rural, poor wants is, food. I mean, real food. You can give them improved seedlings. It's well understood. You can teach them how they can, reclaim their land. Because you see the situations of even multinationals going to these countries and plundering those land, the oil drilling and all that, pollution of the land losing its fertility. I mean, that's what developing country wants. People that will come in and, just like what you're doing now, hear their voice, the strong voice, against what these multinationals are doing. Nobody's against the fact that multinationals should not establish in these countries. But when they do that, they should all also provide mechanism on how to prevent or how to compensate these people for the negative aspect of, what they are doing. Some of them, they've lost the land, the fertility of the land, the plant, they didn't get back anything because of all this. So I believe it's not the issue of GMO thing now, of GMO crops or whatever. GM crops have got their own strong disadvantage. There is the eventual adverse effect it will have on people. You see people, once they're growing, the growth gets distorted because of the genetically modified crops,
yes.
Which is a big problem. But then, say it's Africa. Africa cannot stand. Africa, even when the leaders talk, they invite the leaders for conferences and for summits and all that.
Photographic picture taking.
Exact. That's the word. They invite them for summits just to, at least we have invited you.
Yeah.
Just say something. But after they've talked, do they implement those things? No, they don't. I'm not saying Africa has not got its problem. I'm not saying Africa has not got, some little things that must be addressed in-house. There's quite a lot of things that must be dealt with in-house too. But I believe that the Western world, the developed countries, has a large part to also play in this. Don't just see Africa as a dumping ground. Most of this, they come in, say they take Africa as a dumping ground for most of all these things. They see Africa as the laboratory to experiment with all these things. The developing world, the allies with the developed, with some of the developed countries cannot take that. But they see Africa as subordinates. They can trample on Africa, but then it's still same being, same life, I mean, and same heart as well. We're in the same world. So I believe what the focus, the emphasis should be is on how. I mean, make things look better for everyone, particularly the rural poor. It's evident people are suffering in Africa. The places in Africa where people are starving. The places in Africa where people, it's terrible. It's something that really touches me. And I think whoever is listening and is in a position to do something to change all this, they don't see Africa as a dumping ground, but they should see Africa with a vast potential for growth and development. Thank you.
Matthew, my next question focuses on the crisis of urbanization of cities from the migration of millions of people from rural areas. This is especially troublesome for the less developed countries who are at present largely unable to provide the needs of its peoples, not only in the countryside, but now also in metropolitan areas. I've seen the horrific conditions many poor have to live in when they move into urban areas. It is hard to describe the squalor of shanty towns I've seen in Mexico City, Manila, and other third world countries. I know even in your nation's capital city, Lagos, many people lack clean, safe water. With increasing global population and deteriorating forests and fertile soils, many subsistence villagers are now migrating to cities in hope for a better life. Many end up on the bare margins of survival, some scavenging trash dumps. Would you please comment on this important question?
Population growth. We discovered that the rate at which we have, I'll call it population explosion, in most of these megacities is quite alarming. At Lagos, where I come from, we have, I think, presently about 15 million people, so, which is even more than the population of some countries. I mean, so you can imagine that. And most people come from the rural area. Why does that occur? It's very simple. I mean, the facilities are not there. The infrastructures are not there. The jobs are not there. So people feel that, I mean, I can't stay in the rural area. I have to migrate. I have to move down to the urban region where I can't be able to fend for myself and make livelihood. Most people in the rural area, what they do is they are more involved in farming and other maybe local, I mean, jobs and all that. But we discovered that people want to move to the city to get educated because most schools are there, most universities are in the city. People want to move to the city because they believe that's where the job is, that's where the money is. People want to move to the city because the health facility also, it's great. People want to move to the city because they feel that life is more comfortable right there in the city. I believe it doesn't create a balanced form or a balanced platform for development. Development, real development as I see it, is something that gets to the nitty-gritty. Real development as I see it is something that gets right to the root where the people are. If you want to affect the people, if you want to affect the world at large, go to the rural area. Touch the minds of the people there. Make life comfortable for them. I mean, create the road, create the means to the market, create education there. I mean, schools where they can go and get educated. Such things will help. Will help reduce the migration from rural area down to the city. Because it gets to the point where, I mean, you don't even have a place where to build a house anymore in the city. It gets to the point where the schools are getting overpopulated. It gets like I know back in my country, sometimes people write the exams that qualifies for the university and they had to carry that result for 2 years because there's quite a huge number of people applying to schools. But look at the situation where, I mean, such things is decentralized. You have schools also in the rural areas for people to attend. Education is a strong tool, is a strong key. If you educate a young mind, then you've given that young mind a key to the future. And that's the word. Education, I believe, is a key to development. Without education, you cannot get the development that is needed. It's something when it's channeled in the right direction will bring about an amazing turnaround, an amazing change. So, and sometimes even in some cities, you see that there's so much traffic now. Even in London, I was in London some time ago also, and it's also the same problem there. In some part, you discover that there's traffic jam because so much people. And I even learned, I think, that a policy where if you have to take your car out in London, you have to pay something for that. That's the population explosion we're talking about. But I believe if the government can look in, I think this is a key. This is something that must be looked into. If the government of the developing world and even in the developed country can look at areas, local areas, rural areas, and see how to, I mean, develop such vision, is going to go a long way to affect a lot of things. We should know that all men are created equal. I believe that's the foundation upon which America was built. Yes. All men are created equal. So whether in the rural area, in mega cities or wherever, everyone is created equal and should have same access to education, should have same access to, I mean, to freedom, to live life to the fullest. So these are things that must be looked into to help reduce, I mean, I call it a menace now, because people are always trooping down. I can't remain in the village because I can't get a job there. And I have to leave. I have to feed myself. I have to enjoy at least the basic amenities of life. Now, if you look at the village, you discover that in most of these rural areas, the group of people you find there are the very aged people. Just come back, okay, let me just retire here until rent date comes. You know, because people are moving out. People are moving out. But if we can look at this issue of trying to improve the lives of people in the rural area and increase infrastructures, then I tell you, it's a foundation for international development, for global development. Affect rural area, then I tell you, you affect the world. Thank you.
Today is the 35th anniversary of Earth Day, and I am honored to meet you, Matthew, here at Florida Gulf Coast University for the Student Earth Day Symposium, which is part of many such environment events being held this week around the globe. I am grateful to the many peoples around the planet who are working for a better world and who are celebrating Earth Day in order to bring more attention to the important needs of caring for Mother Earth and all life. While I'm trying to remain optimistic, I am very troubled about the state of our planet. In 1972, I had the privilege to be an observer at the historic United Nations Environment Conference in Stockholm, Sweden. Since then, I've had the honor to attend a number of international conferences, such as the 92 UNCED UN Conference on Environment and Development Rio Earth Summit, several World Forestry Congresses, and a United Nations World Food and Agricultural Symposium. I am active in the International Earth Charter Movement and monitor UN agencies and programs as a journalist. Years ago, I served in the U.S. Peace Corps Environment Program, working on conservation-based rural development in Southeast Asia. As a lecturer here at FGCU, I try to teach students about serious environmental social justice issues like we're talking about today. I mention this background in order to exemplify how serious and important the topics we are talking about are to me. Matthew, this brings me to my next question. That is, what are the serious environmental issues and situations facing Africa?
Pure drinkable water, access to healthy food, access to fresh air, access to the resources that lies deep down in the ocean, in the rivers. That's of paramount importance. It's of real importance to us. I remember when I was growing up as a child, went to the village, and there's this river. People go to that same river to bath, and from that same river they get water to cook. From that same river they get water to drink. It's appalling. It's really, really, really appalling. But that's the lifestyle of people in the rural areas. And you look at it that most of these things also could be traced to the effect or the negative impact multinationals have on some of these resources.
Land use,
the environment at large, gas flaring. It affects the quality of the air. You discover sometimes drilling of oil, the water body is polluted, the marine life is being endangered. You look at also the land as a result of drilling of oil and other activities by some of these multinationals, the land loses its quality, the nutrients. In some places, you plant your crop, but then you don't get the yield anymore. Why? Because the environment has been affected. If I should call to remembrance that multinationals should remember something, that these other people, they are not animals. They must live also. They are humans. They must survive. They need their land. They need the water, pure water to drink. They need the air also. In fact, there have been cases of during glass flaring, the air was so polluted that it affected people. It affected the respiration of people, the breathing of people. People were sick because poisonous gases were emitted into the atmosphere. These are things that are of real importance to the quality of life that people will have. And some of these people, women have to trek long distance to get firewood. People have to sometimes it's very, very difficult to even get some of these things. So I believe it's something that is very, very important. Of course, nobody is stopping the multinationals from coming into the country, from doing something. But when they do that, they should also consider the livelihood of the people. They should also look at that. The people, they must live. I know in all over the world, over 800 million or more have been malnourished, undernourished, impoverished. The quality of food, it's far below standard. But then people must survive. And it's still same world. They are not animals, they are humans also. They are humans. And that's why you discover that sometimes the local people, they tend to react, because it's like pushing someone against the wall. And the person standing and saying, no way, I'm not going to take that anymore. And they end up kidnapping some of these expatriates. Because you're taking what belongs to them and you're not replacing, you're not compensating, you're not giving it back to them. That is just a very, very strong thing that we must look into. I mean, multinational, their presence should bring about development and not under development. And not trying to destroy what is already there in existence. Don't look at this third world or these developing countries as a subject of ridicule, an object of exploitation. There have been so many intelligent people that have emanated from Africa. They are making waves all over the world also. So these are things that we must also look at. And you look at the issue of educating people about the environment. It's something that is of that we should also look into as well, particularly in developing countries. People are not well educated. People come in and there's quite noise pollution too. It's also an environmental issue. You look at the fumes, the gases from these industries, and also it's also a very important issue. And most of these industries, of course, were industries brought in by the developed world. It's a good thing, but nonetheless, the negative impact has not been addressed. You don't take what belongs to people without compensating them. There should be a thing in place to compensate these people. You don't send their people to school. You don't build the roads for them. You don't create means of how even sponsor or invest in research work that can provide lasting solution to the extent or ameliorate the level of pollution of the water body. Even if you do that, it's something that circulates within a few hands, people that listens to them. They give out the money just to silence them. That's the issue of corruption again. So honestly, it is something that we should look into. The multinationals are coming into Africa. They should also, allow their presence to be felt by contributing positively to the development of the environment and for the betterment of the livelihood of the people.
Mama's kitchen got no dress code. You just come and eat your fill. Yeah, 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 yeah. Mama's kitchen got no color code. Come in your native skin. Hey, hey, hey. Mama's kitchen got no borders. It's everywhere you turn. Turn, 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 turn. Mama's kitchen got no dress code. Isn't it time we learn? Hey, hey, hey. No politics on Mama's menu. On the left page or the right. Food enough for each human belly. In the heart, within its sight. Mama's kitchen for the needy. Serves a piece of planet pie. Yeah. And the spoils go to the greedy. Spoiling horizon sky. Sky high. On Mama's menu. On the left page or the right. Food enough for each human belly. In the heart, within its sight. Mama's kitchen got no dress code. You just come and eat your fill. Yeah. Mama's kitchen got no color code. Come in your native skin. Hey, hey, hey. Mama's kitchen got no borders. It's everywhere you turn. Everywhere you turn, 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 turn. Mama's kitchen got no dress code. Isn't it time to learn? Hey, 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 yeah.
You are listening to Yat Kedichi Native Centers, Honoring Mother Earth and Indigenous Voices. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices focuses on protecting Mother Earth and defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples. We are broadcasting on Radio for Peace International. Radio for Peace is the voice of peace, promoter of the environment, champion of human rights, denouncer of hate and injustice, advocate of the oppressed, defender of truth. Radio for Peace International is global community radio.
The music you heard prior to our Yat Kedichi Native Center program identification was from environmental singer-songwriter Rafi. The name of that song was Mama's Kitchen. I first met Rafi at the 26th Annual Conference of the North American Association of Environmental Educators in First Nations Athabascan Tribal Homeland, now called Vancouver, Canada. The theme of that year's conference was Weaving Connections, Cultures, and Environment. This was probably the first time that a major environmental education forum recognized the importance of respecting and learning Indigenous peoples' ethics and wisdoms. At the North American Association of Environmental Educators Symposium, I shared an essay I was asked to write for the 1993 Earth Day USA's National Press Kit. The theme of the 93 Earth Day was Council Circles, whose purpose was to involve Indigenous peoples from around the world and Earth Day events. The statement I wrote is entitled, A Brief Account of the Treaty Record, which I will now share. A Brief Account of the Treaty Record, Council Circles 1993. Indigenous peoples of North America are concerned for the well-being of Mother Earth, our cultural survival, and international relations that are based on mutual respect of each other's sovereignty. Indigenous nations honor Earth and their cultural survival through treaties. Over the course of the last 500 winters, the various sovereign Native nations of North America have negotiated about 800 legal treaties with the governments now known as the United States and Canada. About 400 have been ratified by the U.S. government, yet those treaties have never been honored by the governments and all have been violated. Today, the government's violations continue. From the Native perspective, a primary reason for entering into those treaties, especially in the Northeast, was to protect the environment, especially the sacred places. Long ago, many of our elders and holy people foresaw that new people were coming to this continent. They foresaw a lot of the changes that would occur, and they warned us that we had a responsibility to protect the environment, especially the sacred places and our ceremonial prayer places. If you study the treaties, you will see that often the first part sets out guidelines for protection of the environment and defense of the sacred places. To keep the holy places clean and natural, many treaties had specific provisions to prevent desecrations, such as logging, livestock grazing, mining, farming, and human settlement. But all these treaties have been violated by the governments, and they are still being dishonored and violated today. Under international law, certain principles of sovereignty define a nation. For example, a clearly defined geographic area, a language, a distinct cultural worldview, and historical acknowledgement by other sovereign nations. Many Native American communities have long met and continually maintain these requirements, but they are not accorded respect. The treaties they have signed in good faith have not been honored by the governments which have set themselves up on this continent. Now that the United Nations has officially declared 1993 to be, quote, the year of the world's indigenous peoples, unquote, we call upon all governments and all people to honor and respect the sovereignty of indigenous peoples throughout the world, unquote. Ones A. Pritzker, Yat Kiddushi Native Center. Well, dear friends, we're nearing the end of our broadcast time together for this edition of Wolf Mountain Native Radio. I want to again thank my friend and program guest, Mr. Matthew Owatoki, for being on Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. We conclude today's program with an honoring song from the drum Whitetail, from ABBA Records CD, Thunder Drums. The title of our closing song is For Our People. Until the next Wolf Mountain Native Radio, this is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Aho, kinoan wantakwasin to all of our relations.